Hello and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lrddaul.podbean.com, or you are on iTunes. If you enter Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine, the show pops right up. So I'll go ahead and get into the action. I've been trying to be consistent. Here I am 3 weeks in a row. Definitely want to make sure that I keep putting out good kickboxing content. We had a lot of good fights and a lot of good results. I'll start with the Glory event. A lot of you guys know that I work in the talent ops division at Glory Kickboxing, and proud of the athletes every week. Win, lose, or draw, people put on different performances, and they sometimes they put their best in it and it doesn't go their way. Sometimes they have spectacular wins. It's all over the board in this wonderful sport, and I'm glad to be a part of it. So I'm going to go ahead and start top down. Artem Vakhadov versus Daniel Yunga. Artem Vakhadov gets the decision, 49-46, 48-47 on all cards, on the other two cards. First and foremost, after watching this ringside for two rounds, the first thought that went through my head was, I love kickboxing so much. It is really, they put on, it's what the sport is. They punched, they punched with each other. They had kick returns. They had combo kick returns. They had moments where they had good body kicks and they went first. I thought that Vakhadov had really good steady body kicks, where I didn't think Daniel had that many body kicks. But Daniel had a lot of good step knees, whereas Vakhadov doesn't really use the knees in that way. I thought that it was just a great, fun back and forth. I was fine with the scorecards going either way. One thing that we've talked about, I've talked about with Daniel Yunga, if you listen to the guys over at Liverkick on their podcast, if you've paid attention to Daniel Yunga at all over his career, he had one of the most baffling stints ever. I watched him when he became the best 95 kg fighter in the world, back when 2011, he fought for the It's Showtime title, and he beat Wendell Roche that night. And Wendell Roche was, again, fighting for the title, but Wendell, undersized heavyweight, known for just pressuring, had a really good chin, and then he wore you down by you'd use so much activity, he'd use so much pressure, and the next thing you know, he could throw punches and you can't throw punches. That was his style. And when I first saw Daniel, that's who he reminded me of. So I thought it was a battle of two guys with the same style of just kind of biting down, moving forward, and wearing you down. But Daniel was able to play a technical game in that one. And then he improved and showed even more technique in his next outing. And man, the guy's he got better. He had fights where you were like wondering what was going to happen, and he wasn't consistent with his offense, and he'd get a big KO. And then he kind of was in the middle of the pack, fought in Germany for a little bit. You weren't paying attention to his career as much as It's Showtime became Glory. And then once Glory started to kick off their 95 kgs, he had a pretty good start in the beginning. He had the tournament where he had to win over Jacoby. He was a lost to Tyrone Spong. He had a victory over Michael Duke. And then he just went on this losing streak. He lost seven fights in a row. And at that period of time, he even said it himself, he was thinking about stopping the sport. But he just has so much talent. And there are times when you're like, why is he banging away? Why is he trying to play with all this these power shots? Why is he trying to get in all these exchanges? Why the desire for a KO? Why doesn't he just go back to clean kickboxing? Because when he's at his best, he puts on a show. If you watch the first Wendell Roche fight and then you watch the second Wendell Roche fight, you're going to see a completely different guy technically. And it's the same dude. Good combos, to his low kicks, good step knees. He just, when he puts it together, he's one of the most beautiful kickboxers to watch. You guys will hear me say that a lot about Josh Johnsey. When Josh Johnsey's on form, you are watching the sport in its most beautiful and most excellent form. When he is on form, you are watching the best of the best. That is what talent looks like. Andy Sauer in his prime gave you that feeling when it's just everything seems to be clicking. Now, of course, I've mentioned the guys who've got low kick flow. I'll go ahead and give you guys some body kick guys. If you see a Jordan Watson, when Jordan Watson gets it going with the body kicks and his boxing, and then he'll slide that head kick in there, he looks absolutely fantastic. You don't necessarily have to be a body kick or a low kick guy to have the flow that I'm talking about. But I'm just saying that there is something to it when the rhythm is on point. And last night, Daniel Yunga had that rhythm. Like, I'm just telling you, just the combo, the low kick flow, everything came together. The way I saw the fight, I thought 1 and 3 for me were very clear for Daniel, and 2 and 4 for me were very clear for Volkov. The rhythms of them, the rhythm of the round is the thing that got to me. Because I thought that first, you know, Volkov had given up a lot of offense in the first round just because he was trying to pressure early. He's pushing the pace, earmuffs up, and Daniel just kept throwing shots, go behind the ear, the gloves, down the middle, put a low kick chop, a whole bunch of step knees, good boxing. I thought that Volkov didn't throw a lot of offense, just looked for big power combos in between. Round one, even when he would go hook low kick, Volkov, I thought that Daniel would go combo low kick back. Round two, I thought the rhythm was a little bit different. Not only was Volkov getting his boxing off and he getting his low kicks off in spots, but he was moving a little bit more and he was keeping Daniel from finding his offense. Round three, mirror of round one, I thought that Daniel really pushed the pace with offensive production, a lot of combo flow, and we're in an audience and we're in a crowd who, you know, aren't anywhere close to Germany or, you know, to Germany, Congo, or Russia. They are learning these guys on the fly, and they are into every shot because it was that competitive. You really felt like you're watching the best in the world at that time. And Daniel really had a good round three with his offensive production and his combo low kick return and his single combo, or in his combos in space. And Volkov was scoring more than he did in the first, but I thought that I felt confident Daniel probably won the third round. Going to round four, the rhythm changed again, and Volkov got the power boxing, got the movement. He started scoring the savvy body kick. It just really looked good. Round three just kind of comes down, or round five comes down to what you like. I thought that Daniel had some offensive production in the first minute and a half, and I thought that the, I'll say first minute he had some pretty good spots, maybe after about the 30-second mark, I thought that he got into his flow, and then I would say in the last 40 seconds after some, sorry, I don't know if you guys heard that, there was a small error in, on my part, some sound in the background, my apologies, but back to it, how you look at round five, I thought that there was a gap where there was 30 seconds to, you know, 40, you know, seconds left in the round, that I thought Volkov had scored well and moved, where I thought Daniel was watching a little bit more. So when they went to the cards, I was like, you know, anybody could have got that fifth round. I'm fine with either winner. I thought Volkov probably did enough. I heard a lot of people thought Daniel won. I was fine with either winner, that this was not a robbery in any way. And when they went to the cards, the 49-46 surprised me some. And the 48-47 is kind of how I saw it, but all of them went to, and still, your champion, Artem Volkov. He'd mentioned that he had some hand problems in the back, and I went to go see if he'd broken his hand, which would have been heartbreaking because he's had so much trouble. Turns out he did not. He was all right. He said it was just a little bit sore. We'll find out how bad it is when he gets back to Russia, but he said that he was fine, and Daniel, you know, nothing. His corner was really upset. They thought that they won. They were definitely... he put on such a great performance. Not that he put on just a great performance, but he became the fighter that they thought he could always be. And if you ever see him on form, you look at the Michael Duke fight when there's all these knockdowns, and he's just kind of going bombs away. Then they have the second fight, and in this, or third fight, I should say. First fight, he wins, and it looks like Duke kind of cashes out mentally. Second fight, of course, is one of the fights of the year. They're trying to kill each other, and Duke gets the decision in the extra round. And then the third fight was just absolutely patient execution by Daniel Yunga. He didn't get into a firefight at all. He just looked for his popper moments, combo, low kick, movement, and he was able to score a big shot on Duke. And I just thought that he did a great job in this fight. And just proved why he's one of the best fighters in the world. And I was grateful that he made the decision to not walk away from the sport. It really was spectacular stuff. Unfortunately, this next fight was a robbery, as JD Menendez upsets Anissa Mexen and wins 48-47 on the winning card and 50-45 on the dissenting judge. I want to credit one of the judges there, and a lot of people don't get this enough. But one of the guys says, hey, man, I'm used to just judging MMA. I was wondering if I could pick your brain. I said, sure. He says, whenever I do a card, I'll come over and I'll ask you what you thought of the round. I said, no problem. So after it was done, again, he did this after some of the official ones that he did, and he did it when he was unofficially on the side, just kind of judging for himself. He'd come over and he asked me what I thought. And he says, hey, I'm trying to learn this and so on. That meant a lot to me. It meant a lot to me that he was like, hey, you are in kickboxing. You are around a lot of times. I'm trying to figure out the scoring for this, what I'm thinking. And he came and asked me questions. Later in the night, he was joined by another judge. And they both came over and they asked me, what am I looking for when I look at kickboxing, or what to look for? And then I told them, you know, first and foremost, I look for clean, effective connects for above all else. You know, damage isn't something that I look for in terms of physical damage, but in terms of a bruise, but more in terms of the effect of the shot. If it snaps your head back, if you're limping, like I talked about that, and I kind of gave them my idea, and it meant a lot to me. Not all of them, but just a couple of them came over and asked a question. I've watched, you know, tens of thousands of, you know, kickboxing bouts. Maybe more, but like I've watched them throughout the years, and I'm familiar with it. So when someone asked, I thought that was really cool. If they said, hey, if the boxing judges who first got into MMA came over, they didn't really have MMA judges that they could go to ask, you know. But if they sat down with just random fans and say, hey, why is this more significant than this? I think it would go a long way. So when that judge came over and asked me that, I thought that was interesting. And you know, throughout the night, I told them what my thoughts were, and we exchanged ideas, and I thought it was really cool. Unfortunately, the two who judged this one did not come over and talk to me. Here's my problem with it. JD Menezes, fought to the best of her ability. She's a tough girl that always pushes forward, and she throws combos. Not necessarily the hardest shots, but she just keeps pushing. Sometimes she's got a hard shot in there, but for the most part, she just keeps pushing, keeps trying, and they got into a lot of clinch exchanges early because she was pushing the pressure. But man, Anissa Mexen was able to hold her ground and run JD into so many power shots, like head-snapping shots. She had several times where she teeped her in the face, like effective, head-bend back. The girl would just, or JD would just kind of hold on to the foot after getting teeped in the head. Just, she kept scoring the clean, significant. It's probably one of the fights where she scored her most clean, significant offense. And when they went to the cards, I told them I had it 50-45, but I could imagine it being, you know, closer. Maybe JD got one of the rounds, round three. She had a really good start. Round one, they came out in those exchanges, and sometimes aggression can, you know, sway a judge. But I thought that it was so clear for Mexen, more clear than any of the fights before. Now, let me put it this way. I would have been less shocked if Ashley Nichols got a victory over her in L.A. than this victory here, because Ashley really pushed the pace and really went to clinch and really kept Mexen from getting into her normal offensive flow. So when that fight happened, I was starting to think, you know, I think there's a really, really good chance that the upset was going to happen. When I was in LA, I was like, man, Mexen should get this, but there were some really close moments. This night, I'm sitting there fully confident that Anissa Mexen won. Just the clean power connects weren't even close. Not that JD didn't have moments, and she did throw a lot of punches. I saw one punch count that said she threw more, and then they said that she landed more, but the stuff that they're counting is like some of the punches that she like shoe shined to the arms and stuff like that. It was clear that the power, the clean, effective offense was coming from Anissa Mexen, no question about it. So when they said and knew, and the crowd is booing and everybody's like, what just happened? And I'm getting tweets and I'm getting texts and, you know, and I'm getting, you know, messages from everybody like, what happened? That was wrong. That seriously must have been a mistake. Kieran Fitzgibbon said to me, he goes, that must have been a mistake. Like, just relook at the scorecard. Maybe they were confused at which one was Anissa Mexen. It was that kind of crazy. And Anissa, of course, I don't know if I'd use the term heartbroken. I just think she was mad. After the fight, she walked out. She even left her team, like, just walked right out of the arena, and they were upset in the corner and just couldn't believe it. And, you know, it's always tough. It's always tough when that happens. And their team talked about protesting, and you know, you never want it to happen. Of course, you guys know that I was Johnny Hendricks' striking coach when he was fighting, and And at the end of his career, he had one of those not go his way. You know, we thought we beat George St. Pierre. We thought we beat him clear. At least we had some close arguments in that fight. Like, you can make, still thought we won when I rewatched it, but you can make some arguments that in some of the rounds that it was closer. And for me, as heartbroken as I was that night, I could feel what she was going through in terms of that. But times 10 when you absolutely dominate everything. When I re-looked at our fight, I was like, man, this fight with George was closer than I thought, but I still thought we won. And when I look at the situation with JD and Anissa, when you re-look at the rounds, you're like, man, she's just, at moments, she's just landing power shots at will, and the 1-2 was scoring really well, the 3-2 was scoring really well. Whenever there was an exchange, she would get the better of the exchange. I really thought that this was going to be clear for Anissa Mexen. It's heartbreaking that it went down that way. But this isn't JD's fault, and she didn't, ask for it. She didn't say, judges go against me. She just kept working, or judges go for me. She just kept working her hardest, and she took some shots, and she kept pushing, she kept punching. There was a time where I kept her in her corner yell over and over and over for her to not clinch. Don't clinch. Stay in range where you can just keep punching. Stay in range where you keep punching. So they did their best to just get her into offense, and she was tough, and she kept grinding away. But she did not win this fight, in my personal opinion. But it's not a reflection of her effort. She really did try hard, and she has nothing to do with the scorecards. And when the scorecards go your way, I got to imagine that was one of the happiest moments of her life. You know what I'm saying? Paycheck's pretty good, and you've got the title. So maybe we do the rematch in October, but that's how it went down this time. We're going to go ahead and move on down the card as we got Shahir Adamchuk as he gets a victory over Anvar Bonazarov. Anvar, who usually looks for his power shot all fight, I thought that he spent even more time looking for the power shot, and Adamchuk was just having his way, just scoring and moving. Power 1-2, slick left hand turnout afterwards, threw an inside leg, started attacking the rear back leg in the second round. It's just an execution, like just really, really skilled. Took very, very little damage in the fight. Anvar did try a head kick at one period of time, and he rushed in for the finish, and Adamchuk grabbed him, caused a clinch. They separated, grabbed him again, caused a clinch, and then went back to work. Just used it to stifle his offense, and then went back to it. So just a clear Adamchuk-type victory. He's really skilled, and sometimes I want him to step on the gas a little bit, but Adamchuk's a winner, man, and he's got a lot of glory victories. Anvar, he tried hard. He just didn't throw the power that I know he prefers, the combos and just the activity that he's done in the past. It just didn't come this time. So he'll have to go back to the drawing board, keep working, and hopefully his next outing will be a little bit better for him. Massaro Glender gets a victory over Claude Taranaki. Two things you get from this one. One, how skilled Glender is. Two, how tough Taranaki is. Massaro Glender got it started good and early. He was really steady with the jab. Quaid, I should say, came out and started scoring some low kicks and looking for boxing in spots and really trying to get his low kick going. And he's finding it early because Glender was focused on the jab so much. Glender, clean boxing, jabs, 1-2s, and then all of a sudden he puts together a cross-hook high-kick combo, and Quaid goes down. Quaid gets up. Glender's on the attack. He's throwing power shots, but he's not in a hurry. He's looking for his moments. He's scoring boxing clean. He gets a step knee right towards the end of the round that scores another down for him. And so he starts off the fight right away with a 10-7 round. Round two, it's looking like Glender's going to go and try to get the finish. But Quaid was up to the task. He kept getting up, kept battling, kept looking for offense, kept looking for his moment. Glender just had more skill. There was another down in the second. And then in round three, you get four knockdowns in a fight as a stoppage. Quaid wasn't going down. He fought to the best of his ability. He stayed strong. He looked for offense. He wasn't able to score and connect the way I know he probably wanted to, but he met a Glender that was on form. Massaro Glender looked great. Everything came together for him with the step knees and the boxing. Clearly he probably could have turned it up and tried to see if he could get the stoppage. But at the same time, Taranaki was game. He wasn't going anywhere. That dude was tough. Hopefully we get to see Taranaki again against a guy who's a little bit less of a step up, because Glender's right at the top, so that's a huge step. As for Glender, anything's good. You know, we want to keep moving this guy. We want him in title contention. He's the kind of guy that you want at the top of your kickboxing division. We move on to Simon Marcus, as he is now 3-1 in the series with Jason Wilnes. For those of you who didn't see it, the weigh-ins had some fireworks as Simon Marcus got in Wilnes' face, and they have a mean stare-off, and then Wilnes grabs his pretty much almost like a choke, or where he kind of puts his hand in his neck and he pushes him away. When he pushes him away, Wilnes pushes Wilnes back with a really strong push as the CEO Marshall gets in between them, and they're trying to fight each other, and then they go to the back and they're still at it, you know, because when they went backstage, they were still trying to get to each other at the weigh-ins. So when that happened, you're thinking, okay, Marcus is going to go out there, be undisciplined, try to bang away, try to throw punches, do what happened in the fight that he lost. And wasn't the case. Simon Marcus was super disciplined. He threw straight, strong shots. Wilnes stayed behind his heavy guard, trying to walk Marcus down in fine moments. And, you know, Marcus's corner kept saying, turn him, turn him, turn him. Every time that happened, he would get on his, you know, get the footwork going, move out of the way, make Wilnes reset. And he kept firing his body kick and the kick to the arm and kick to the body, as Marcus always does. And it echoes throughout every arena, because that guy is a powerful dude. And he just put on a clean kickboxing performance. We then go to the scorecards. This should have been a foreshadow of things to come. In no way did I think Wilnes threw enough offense to win, because he just kept waiting for the perfect shot. And Wilnes is a very talented guy, and I like it when he gets into his offensive flow. The kind of aggression that he used when he fought Israel Adesanya, for example, stayed heavy with the combos to the low kicks, didn't wait, didn't stop. Walked him down, looked for power. This one, he very rarely threw a kick. If he did, it was an inside low kick. And he just looked for the power shots upstairs, and he spent most of the round walking around. He had a couple of series where he was able to throw heat, but for the most part, he did not get into his offensive flow. We go to the cards, and we have a 29-28 for Marcus, 29-28 for Wilnes, and the last judge was 30-27. I'm sitting there thinking, man, we dodged a bullet there, because that would not have been the right call. I just didn't see it. I didn't see what they were seeing on that one. And then afterwards, as I mentioned before, the judges came over. The judge that I mentioned came over and asked me how did I score it and what did I think and why did I score it that way. And that was one of those fights that we discussed. I thought Marcus won clear. I thought Wilnes was, you know, game and strong. And he did throw power in moments and look for combo series and look for counters. But he didn't get close to throwing consistent offense in any round. And when he's at his best, that's what he's doing. He's scoring big power shots throughout the round. So Marcus moves on, gets the victory. Title shot coming in his near future, probably. D'Angelo Marshall goes against Antonio Dvorak. Gets a stoppage by TKO, 2:14 in the fifth round. Antonio hadn't fought in a little bit, so he was like punching and then getting into the clinch and punching and getting into the clinch, trying to find his flow. D'Angelo Marshall immediately was looking for power shots with the boxing. He wasn't able to get anything through early, and Antonio was able to shut a lot of it down with his clinch work. And then all of a sudden, in one of the exchanges, D'Angelo just guessed and threw an uppercut. Uppercut scored clean, started a series of offense where Antonio was trying to hold on, and then after that, a big shot scores, and Antonio goes down. Antonio gets to a knee, and it looks like he's going to get back up. And then they asked him if he was okay, if he was fit to continue. And he didn't get up, so then they called it. And D'Angelo Marshall got the stoppage. What happened was the shot had severely affected his eye, affected his vision. He had to go to the hospital later that night. Just right shot, right time, right place. And it's unfortunate, because at the end of the night, I always want every fighter to walk away. I don't want anybody to leave this game mentally. I mean, it's tough enough with your pride, you know. It's tough enough with where you are mentally. But I don't want anybody to leave this game injured after any event. Hurt, I understand. That's part of the game. But I don't want you injured, and especially something like the eye. So Antonio, clearly he, you know, hopefully he gets healed up and we get to use him in another opportunity. We'll see him, you know, on better days. D'Angelo Marshall, one of the better kickboxers at heavyweight in the world. He just needs more consistency, you know, and another step up against the elite, but maybe not too big of a step up. You know, he won against Benjamin Adegbuyi and got stopped in the first round. He's definitely disappointed that was the outcome, and he bounced back with a victory here. But they want to move him towards the top 10. They got to find him somebody kind of right in that middle-ish area and see where he is before they move him back against an elite top 5 opponent. But Marshall's a tough guy. He's been consistent for the company, and I'm glad that he got the victory. Justin Houghton, J-Ho, gets a victory over Trey Sheridan. This performance was by far the most shocking thing. Well, the second most shocking thing. The scorecards for Anissa Mexen and JD was the most shocking thing. This was the second most shocking thing. Justin Houghton was on fire. And I don't know if it was because he was on TV and home crowd, but I didn't know he could throw as hard as he did. He was throwing some shots. And he was committed to his boxing. He threw some really good power, committed to... he committed really, really strong to landing big shots in space. And a couple times he got Sheridan in trouble with some of his power flurries. When they got back to space, Sheridan was fine. He was getting into his combo low kick game well. You know, he had a hook low kick. He had a single low kick. He had good boxing in spots with his 3-2 with his jab overhand. And he caught and buzzed Houghton a few times. Buzz not hurt. Buzzed him a few times. That kind of woke him up. When I looked at that, I was like, man, this dude is, he's just brought it. Like, Houghton just determined to go. They had a ref separation after a weird thing where Houghton kept trying a jumping knee. And one of them, he kind of got high and then just kind of flipped right over Troy Sheridan and landed right outside the ropes. They restarted the fight, and he scored a knockdown right towards the end of the round. Sheridan, I could see him in the corner. He was so mad that he went down because, you know, it just, it in a three-round fight, it affects the scorecard so much if you get a knockdown. But J-Ho was on point. Next round, two, threw a lot of heat. Had another power series early in the round. And then Troy Sheridan got into his flow. I thought after about 1 minute into the first round, the next minute and a half was all Troy Sheridan with movement and boxing and scoring well. You know, Houghton had blew a lot of energy trying to get that stoppage and trying to get that spectacular offensive technical scores, like power technical scores. He slowed a little bit in his action, and in there, Sheridan picked up the kickboxing skill that he has. And the end of the round, J-Ho had a good finish, but at the same time, the whole round would have been Troy Sheridan trying to outdo the work that happened to him in the first minute. And the first minute was a lot of power shots, a lot of shots that you remember that show up on the scorecard. So definitely I can see why Sheridan probably lost that round. Round three, Houghton had slowed significantly, and Sheridan really did get into his kickboxing flow again. Got a lot of low kicks scored, but at that point, you know, being down two rounds, he needed the boxing scores. He needed something big to happen. Either, he could have scored a knee or a kick to the head for sure, but he needed something consistent with the hands. He needed to put Houghton on his butt to get something back on the scorecards. Houghton was able to stay strong, and he had a good final 30 seconds of the fight. Very entertaining fight. Good to see how loud the crowd got behind Houghton. It was a lot of fun. It was fun to watch. Good stuff for J-Ho, who also was very helpful in getting me some contacts when I was trying to get the replacement fighter. So appreciate it, and good luck in future. We'll probably be using J-Ho again. He's a regular. Next fighter on the card is Myron Dennis, as he gets a victory over Steve Papraki, TKO, 3 knockdowns. So first, thank you very much to Steve Papraki. A lot of people disappointed in this one. So here's the story of what happened. Danny Mitchell, who was supposed to be in the tournament spot, was cutting weight, and all of a sudden his body shut down, and he was rushed to the hospital. So not dying, but, you know, shut down, and he couldn't do, it didn't feel right, had to get fluids in him. He couldn't compete for us. So after that, we had a replacement. And the replacement, in preparation during the week, had something happen to his neck. They was hoping it cleared up if he was needed, and then it did not clear up, and he wasn't able to go. So I had to find a whole new person to jump into the tournament. So originally that's what it was going to be. So then I found a guy who fought and who actually fought Steve Papraki in Jason Lee. And Lee was willing to take the fight. Lee hadn't fought in a while and kept saying that he was lighter. He says, man, I'm about 200, 205. I said, that's fine. You know, you can jump in the tournament. I told him why I'd pay him. So he drives an hour down, and I'm looking at him. I go, man, he's smaller than I've ever seen him. And then he goes, yeah, brother, I'm light. So then they go and they get him on the scale. He's eating, he's drinking, he's trying to. And I'm like, okay, he's trying to get bigger. What's he going to weigh? He gets on the scale. He weighs 193 pounds. Myron Dennis weighed 207 pounds, and the commission said they would not allow them to fight. They wouldn't let him compete. So I had to find another replacement. Keep in mind, before this, I had already gone through like three or four guys to try to get that spot. So I was trying to find another replacement. And what happened was I had heard about Steve. Steve had been reaching out to us after because he's sparring partners with Danny Mitchell. And Danny Mitchell, you know, had told him he was in the hospital. So Steven started reaching out about the fight. So then all of a sudden his name comes to me and they said that he could help with ticket sales. And I was like, well, you know, I'll give him a shot. Steve said yes right away. He came down, drove from his gym, came down. We did pictures for him and we did, you know, everything as soon as we could. We got him on the scale. He was actually preparing himself to cut down to 209 because he thought he was going to be able to get in the tournament still. So he was game in a way that I appreciate. He really, really did want to try and he did want to compete for us. We're talking, I mean, 24 hours notice, literally, you know. I mean, he maybe fought after he signed the contract just before he went out there. So we worked out the details before. He had no problem. You know, I was like, hey, do you need a hotel room? He goes, no, I'll just go stay at home. And he came out. We made the deal happen very quickly. So I appreciated him just showing up. And I didn't want Myron Dennis to lose a fight in general. At that time, Marshall, the CEO, had already decided that it was to our benefit as a company to not have the tournament. It's just a bad look for us to try to find a replacement for the tournament field and then a replacement in case something happens in the tournament. They're like, hey, let's see if we can just salvage two super fights. So what I had to do was Dennis had already started to rehydrate. So I had Dennis reweigh, and then he had rehydrated up to, you know, from 207 to 220. And then we used the 229 is what Steven weighed in at. We called it a heavyweight bout instead, and the commission okayed it. I need to stop and say thank you to the Colorado Commission. They are one of the easiest, kindest, most patient commissions that I've ever worked for. Like, they were just worked with, I should say. The way they answered things, the patience, I appreciate it and we'll work with you and this is how much time he has. I can't let him fight if we get past this moment. We for sure have to have this in. These are individuals you use. I just blown away with how cool that they were. Definitely shout out to them. And that's how this fight came about. Because the most important thing about this fight was we had an athlete put in a full camp looking to compete for a tournament, already loses the money because the tournament doesn't have the max reward at the end of it. So he's just looking to compete after putting money into a camp and spending time away from family. I just wanted to guarantee that he had a fight. So Myron Dennis was able to get a fight with Steve Papaki. Clearly, Dennis showed the superior skill, came out with heavy low kicks, was able to score boxing. And then I think he scored after a couple big low kicks scored. Anytime Steve would throw at Myron, Myron didn't respond at all, as if nothing could hurt him. And then he threw a right hand and it into a step knee. And that got him, that got Steven in trouble. Steven was a little bit shy, gun shy after that. And then it was, I think it was a power 1-2-2. Brings it back to the right hand, fires another one. I'm trying to remember it correctly off my mind. But right hand scores a knockdown. Steven goes down. Steven gets up, tries to battle on. Step knee with the left knee puts him down again. And then the end of the round, a head kick is thrown. And it wasn't the cleanest stoppage because the arm did get on the head kick a little bit. And then it's just more of the power of it put Steve down. After a really cool Lomachenko angle change, Myron Dennis was able to get that leg up there with power. And even though I've said this to my students all the time, if he still puts you down, if your arm is connected to your head, you know. So, but in this situation, it was kind of more of an awkward angle thing. Steven went down, and the refs had three knockdowns and called it. So, appreciate on short notice Steven stepping up and taking that opportunity. Myron Dennis did what he had to do. He was a superior, skilled technician, and he really dominated the kickboxing. So, hopefully, this starts a streak for Myron Dennis, who really, you know, made a good account for himself that week. He's made a good account for himself this year with the, you know, the performance with Pavel Zhuravlev, and then tonight getting this dominant win. He's all about the dancing. So he comes out dancing, and a cool point when he's walking out to the ring, he looks to his left, and it shows a video of him dancing, you know, doing a Billy Bounce. So then when he saw it, he had to do the dance in front of himself doing the dance. It was just so funny. So he gets the victory there and moves forward. Fight of the night, Chris Camozzi versus John King. It's one of the most interesting fights. So John King comes out on fire. You know, he goes right kick to right hand. He buzzed Camozzi a little bit. Camozzi's battling back, but King is just throwing heat, and both guys are throwing, and King is throwing a lot of power shots. Camozzi's clearly in trouble. They're battling through. The whole first minute and a half was John King almost knocking out Chris Camozzi, looking for power shots. Chris was firing back. He's holding at the right time, but he's punching. He wasn't just taking it. He was in bad shape, but he was still trying to battle back and punch. Then the strangest moment, just watching it for me, was what seemed like what happened was an accidental headbutt that landed right under the jaw of John King caused for separation. And they went, and he took a little bit moment to recover. During that period of time, I feel like Chris Camozzi cleared his head, because before it, King was all over him, trying to kill him, trying to get the stoppage. After it, King still had some energy, but not the same energy as before. And the wounded guy, the hurt guy that he had in front of him before, had his head cleared a little bit. So then they're banging out. The end, Camozzi had some really good moments, and King got tired all of a sudden, and it was just crazy to witness. It was a battle. In round two, the energy was gone. John King had used it all in the first round to get the stoppage, go ahead and add elevation. He had nothing left. And then I just think it was just steady, steady work. Not even the most powerful shots, but Camozzi just kept throwing, just kept looking for offense. And as the round drained on, and it didn't go that much longer, King was tired. He kept bending over. A step knee scored, and he went down, but I don't even think the force of the knee hurt him as much as just it was a way for him to go take a knee and get some rest. So he takes the knee, bounces back up, and then the final flurry was just not even a really good score landed. Just King was too tired to throw back, and they called the fight. So Chris Camozzi in front of a hometown crowd, it's cool to see that many people into the fight and that many people not wanting someone to lose, and then the thrill of victory as things change and they get their decision. It was pretty fun to watch. So good stuff for Camozzi. You know, clearly both guys will move on. Hopefully both guys will continue to build their resume at 209 pounds. The card was opened by Riot Waller as he gets a big time win, a big time KO over Zach Wells. You know, Zach Wells is nice guy, coolest guy you ever want to talk to. Uses his length strangely. Sometimes he can use it well. Sometimes he gets in a little bit too close. He's got a sneaky power in his right hand. But this fight, he wasn't able to get into his offensive flow consistently, but he got into it in spots where he'd score and move and land something weird, but he never got into any kind of confident combo flow. Waller, on the other hand, Waller doesn't really have like a setup jab that he used. He gets himself into range with his feet, and then he unleashes his power. So he'll throw everything kind of in singles for a moment, and then all of a sudden he's throwing in bunches. As soon as you start going backwards against, you know, Waller, you're getting yourself in trouble. You know, that's where he picks up steam and the power shots start to score well. I really thought he did a good job of closing the distance, throwing power shots. He did it well. It helped him secure round two, and at the end of round two, and it helped him secure round one. And after that, after we got to the third frame, same thing. He kept bailing straight back, and what Wells does is he'll kind of extend his arms, and I think Waller just kept throwing because there was nothing kind of defending the home until a big shot landed and he was in trouble. You could see that Wells was probably going to go. Then a big shot landed, and Wells went down. The ref did a good job of untangling his legs because he kind of folded in a weird spot. Good debut for Waller. You know, I gave him this opportunity because he had a knockout victory over Warren Thompson. So I was really happy that he was able to go out there and perform, let the power hands go. And I want to see him compete more. You know, we need guys at 187. We need fresh faces at 187 pounds. Guys like Warren Thompson being gone now. You know, some people leave in the division, like Mike LeMaire. I need fresh faces, so good stuff there. As for Wells, you know, he started off his glory career with the KO, you know, and then he had a really huge step up against Simon Marcus. No fault there. It's just some things that he'll have to look at defensively, and then getting back into his offensive flow by, you know, straightening his feet out. But he still has something there. You know, just the defense, of course, you got to have that, man, because they're throwing big shots. One of my favorite performances on the prelim part of the card, as we go into that, Waller was the last of the Fight Pass series. I really liked the performance by LT Nelson, or Lawant Nelson, Smash, against Vince McGinnis. I thought that Nelson had got right into a savvy hook, low kick, jab, low kick game. He kept playing with angles with his shoulders and his movement, and he'd find the right moment to fire the jab and the low kick and the hook and the low kick. He really got going good and early. He scored a big shot over the top that scored a knockdown. And Vince just never got into his offensive flow. It's one of those nights where it's like you see it, but the offense just ain't coming to you. And I think that Vince probably could have made a better account from himself if he could get into his flow. And that's the number one thing they kept saying over in the corner. They're like, hey, let it go. You know, fail trying, if you will. That's the term that I use, fail trying. I think he was like, hey, it's time to go. It's time to push. It's trying to punch. It's you got to stop thinking about the perfect shot. That's what I felt like Dwayne was trying to establish to him. But Vince, you know, that's the game. You know, sometimes it's just not your night and you're not seeing it. It's not flowing the same. And you maybe you do see the opportunity, but the response from mind to body just isn't going the way that you want. Whereas Nelson looked good, a lot of combo work got into, and in round three, I thought Nelson picked up the pace. He was throwing a lot harder with the boxing. I think he was trying to look for a stoppage or a knockdown. I thought that he did really, really good. Nelson made a good account for himself. 27 years old. Hopefully he's one of the kickboxers that can push this sport moving forward. Good stuff by the undefeated Nelson. Sean Choice gets a victory over Thomas Diagne. Split decision, 30-27 in one card, 28-29 on the other, and then 29-28 giving it to Choice. I thought all three rounds went to Choice, but I did think that Diagne had some good moments. He's got this sneaky uppercut. You know, it's not very powerful, but he'll pop this uppercut and then he'll go into the clinch. And then if you give him some room, he'll do a really spectacular technique, something spinning back kick or spinning hook kick or teep. Like he plays with it in spots. And maybe that's what swayed that one judge in favor of Thomas Diagne, just the flash and the moment that he found the flash. But as far as the consistent offense, I thought that it came from Sean Choice, who really started off the fight with that powerful kick. You know, they let that left kick to the go to the body and to the arm. It's the thing that broke Jacoby's arm. Like, he's so powerful there, and he just kept whipping it. And again, Jacoby's arm was already a little injured. He just kind of battled back and came back a little early. But Choice had skill, and I could see it, and I remember you know, as I'm talking to Talent Ops team, I was like, hey, let's give this kid one more shot. I think he can make a good count for himself. He came back and he got a victory in his second glory outing, and that's what we want. Stay with it. Keep working hard. That opportunity comes again, you make the most of it the next time out. Good stuff by Sean Choice. Thomas Diagne, representing AKA. I thought you fought fine, you know. Clearly you're gonna work on more consistency with his offense on the feet. And maybe that comes with just opportunities. You know, he's fighting MMA and kickboxing, so maybe his rhythm's thrown off by trying to do both. But good stuff by both guys, and Choice gets the victory. Hassam Al-Kassri gets victory over Ben Acosta. Hassam's a talented kid, man, and he started off his career 0-1, didn't get into his offensive flow in that fight, but he had a really good amateur career. So when we went there, I said, you know, I'm going to give this guy a shot. You know, I think that he's got some talent. I think that he's going to put on a good show. Had a good crowd there for him. Ben Acosta, he was 2-0, had a good amateur career, big karate background. I think maybe the size of Hassam, because Hassam was bigger than he was, kept him from getting into his flow. Because he had some good kicks, you know, some spinning hook kicks, some you know, he played with flash and spots. But he couldn't get his boxing going at all, and he kept getting walked down. And you could hear Hassam's corner yelling over and over, walk him down, walk him down. I really want to see more from Hassam. I think he's very talented. And I also want to see more from Ben Acosta. He took this fight on a week and a half notice. He could have been like, no, that's not the opportunity. He took this fight on short notice, came out, performed, you know, to the best of his ability against a bigger guy, because 143 is in his weight class. He just took it at 143 because he felt like he could go out there and do some good things. He had some moments, but the bigger guy on the night, Hassam, fought extremely, extremely well. Good job with the body and the high kick. He found the boxing exchanges after his kicks, and he was able to get the W. Nothing to be ashamed of for either for Ben Acosta and loss, and really good stuff for Hassam Al-Khassri and victory. We move on to Charles Rodriguez against Justin Loss. Charles Rodriguez came out really, really aggressive with the combo and the low kick work, focused on kicking around the knee and the calf, really, really steady on the calf low kick. Really started to do its work. Justin Loss went down. He got back up, battled through, kept looking for an uppercut here and there. He would throw boxing here and there. He switched stance to buy himself some time because in the second round, it looked like he was going to go again. Charles Rodriguez had picked up on the low kicks. Once he switched stance, Charles would just kind of try to fire at the back leg and, you know, to the best of his ability, get that guy out and get Moss out of there. And then Moss goes back, sits on the stool between him and his corner and say, "You got to go." And Moss goes. Round three, Justin Moss brought the fight. And it's something that I talk about all the time. Don't treat round three. If you lost the first two rounds, don't treat it like it's a round that you need to win. Treat it like it's a fight that you need to win in 3 minutes. And I thought that he did that. I thought that he threw power in spots. He had that sneaky uppercut that he was scoring here and there. I really thought that Moss did his best. The only problem was the work was done. And Rodriguez could slow a combo flurry by going back to the leg and then going to his own boxing. Charles Rodriguez still working on getting power in the hands. He's more of a kick guy and a knee guy. If you've watched him in Full Rules Muay Thai, the elbows and the clinch work is real big scores for him. And, of course, his counter kick game and his low kick game. So I thought that Rodriguez did a good job in his second glory outing this year. He's 2-0. And I thought that Justin Moss really, really came after him in that last third frame. There was urgency there. He scored some good shots that, you know, snapped Rodriguez's head back. But in the end, Rodriguez had gotten all three cards 30-26 thanks to the knockdown in the first. But Justin Moss, you really did make a good account for yourself. You really fought hard, and that was a good way to open up the card for us. So, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that card, and I'm excited about what's going to come for the athletes in future because, man, they are some talented, talented individuals. So I'm going to go ahead and move from there and go to talk about the card, the Kunlun card that happened last week in China. Well, it didn't happen last week. It happened, like, 5 days ago. And there's some decisions that I expected, some decisions that I did not expect. So first of all, go ahead and go down it. Yuya Yamada gets a victory over Liu Jianbu, TKO in the third. I'm a big fan of Yuya Yamada. You guys have heard me mention him on the podcast before. Definitely did good work. I'm excited to see him get a victory. Hui Gunghao gets a victory over Banjan Zepina. Again, I need to see more of, I believe it's pronounced Hui. He did good. Want to see more from him down the road. I don't think he's one of the better fighters from China, but I think he's tough. Nayanesh Iman gets a victory over Jay Zhao by decision. Neither of those guys are guys who I would pick to win the tournament. I do think that they are serviceable, working hard, and they're going to put on good fights no matter who they go against. I just don't think that there's ever going to be a big tournament. And I believe they weren't the reserve. They were single fights in this one. If they were to get entered into a tournament field, I expect a good performance, but they're not the kind of names where I'd say they would win it. But victory, nevertheless, for Nayanesh Ayaman. In the reserve bout for the tournament, Artem Pashporin, a veteran who we've talked about many times, as he's fought in Kunlun several times, he gets a victory over Zhu Boitang, extra round decision, close one there, but Artem Pashporin continues to get good wins and do good things in China. He's one of my favorite guys to see on cards, and I like that he's found consistent work out there. Kong Ling Feng gets a victory over Takuya Imamura. That was an extra round decision. Again, Kong Ling Feng is solid, not one of the elite guys, but maybe this tournament can reveal more about his skill set at 70 kgs in China. I'm curious to see how far he goes. In one of the upsets of the card, Mauron Tutua gets a victory over Nicholas Larson. Scored with that length very well. Had some good combo flow. Got the kick game going. Nicholas Larson, there are days where he looks spectacular and there are days where he looks a little bit off. And this was a little bit off day for him. Mauron Tutua gets the victory and moves forward. And I talked about it before. He's got that bad KO loss to Bacall. So that's what most people remember for Tutua. But he's a talented guy. And I'm glad that he got the victory here and that he's having such a good tournament run. Vlad Tuanov gets a victory over Ishmael Benali, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Benali, I'll send it to you. Vlad Tuanov, we've talked about him before. One of the talents to watch moving forward. He is, like I said before, he's not a Drago Gago level tournament guy, like a guy where you see this guy for sure is going to be one of the top 3, 4, or 5 fighters in the world. But he's got a lot of skill, and he's got some solid victories. He's clean in every area. I wanted him to be more spectacular as a power puncher, but I don't think that that's his game. He's just more of a complete kickboxing technician, and he finds his offense very, very good. Very young man, so good victory for him here. Johnny Risco continues a surprising career as he gets a victory over Li Shiyuan. Risco, of course, in Fusion, and he's got victories over Andy Sauer. He's got an injury victory over Tayfun Askin. He's one of the top 10 70 kg fighters in the world. Some by injury, some by victory. Got a victory over Bacall. He's pushing, man. He's making a good run, much better than I would have expected. I thought that he was going to have a good kickboxing career. This last year, 2 years, he's having a great run. So good stuff by Risco. He gets a victory and moves forward. And the upset of the card, unchallenged for me. David Kiry gets a victory over Anatoly Moiseev. It all started because he was scoring, throwing power combos, and he scored the knockdown early in the fight. Moiseev is fighting from behind after that point, so he can't get into a clean kickboxing game. Instead, he's got to try to, battle through with power shots and try to get back on the scorecards. But Kiria had already did enough work early and kept scoring the power combos, and it kept Moiseev from getting the victory. I would not have pictured that happening. I'll go ahead and say it. Wrong. I thought Moiseev would be at minimum a guy in the finals of this tournament. Kiria gets the upset and moves forward. Nordin Minmo, who I'm not sure how it worked out, but is still in this tournament after losing to Anatoly Moiseev in the, in their tournament meeting before. He gets a victory over Sergei Kulaba. Nordin Minmo is one of the best fighters. He's really, really talented. Very strong with his punches, sneaky knees, strong for the weight class. I'm a fan of his. I'm glad that he got the victory. Glad that he moves forward. Keeps a Dutch presence, Dutch Moroccan presence in the tournament field. And I'm excited to see more from him. Zanis Zuev gets a victory over Victor Nagbe. I like Victor Nagbe. He's fought in China a lot. He's really made a name for himself. He pushes hard. Probably one of the better Australian fighters in the international scene. Zanis Zuev he's a veteran. He's been fighting over in China a lot. He's been fighting for Kunlun a lot. He gets the victory and moves forward in the tournament. I don't know if I think that he's going to win it, but I think that he's a good name and he should do well. Feng Jingling gets a victory over Louis Hanan at 70 kgs. That wraps up the rest of the tournament field. I'm excited to see how the next round goes. I'm curious to see what Anatoly Moiseev is going to do here. I don't know if his contract is for several fights or if it was just for the tournament field. But I mean, it really was a great card and had a lot of good names, Risco and Moiseev, those guys are legit top 10 guys, they're really, really good stuff by them. Part of me, do you think, I know Super Bowl was supposed to be in there, and I say do you think because I'm talking to my grand audience. If any of you know if maybe Super Bowl's absence is a product of Nordin Minmo getting into the tournament again. Who knows? I could be wrong there, but just figured I'd throw that out. But yeah, I'm going to go ahead and wrap the show up by going over to Crush. I'm not going to talk about the whole card. I'm going to talk about the reemerging confidence of Minoru Kimura. There were other fights on the card. I'll just mention some of them at the top. Kenta Hayashi gets a victory over Hiroshi Mizumachi by KO. Yuta Shinohara gets a victory over Jun Inazukawa. And that was a split decision, 30, 29-30 and 30-29 in those cards. You know how they love their draws in Japan, their draw rounds. Ryo Atake gets a victory, a stoppage victory over Toshio on the undercard. I mean, on the lower portion of the card. It was a cool card all in all. But the main thing I want to talk about is Minoru Kimura finding that confidence again. And I think this is his third KO this year. He does this thing after he gets the KO when he puts his hands behind his back and he goes and he stares off, looks at the camera, opponent behind him. Sometimes his team will come up and join him. But that pose is just another thing that he does to sell himself. It's just another thing that separates him from just your average everyday kickboxer who goes out there and competes to the best of their ability. He's different, man. This dude is different. And it's so fun to watch how much he's been working and how much success he's been having and how much he's been pushing. He was on fire just 2 years ago. And then he just ran into the strangest series of things not going his way. And you never want that to happen, but that's the game. You know, that's the game. You want to see people have success for a while and stay consistent. But sometimes they run into those rough patches. And that's what happened to Daniel Younga, and he worked his way out of it. And that's what happened to Minoru, and he's working his way out of it. I'm going to go ahead and add one more card because I didn't get it on the last show. Fight Night, San Tropez, 6. We have Johan Ledon getting a victory over Johan Kungulo. He scored a high kick, I want to say. I should say always because it's Johan Ledon. He's just a great veteran who's been in the game for a long time, and I remember I was there the night that he won the It's Showtime title over Gregorian, and he's just an awesome fighter. And Johan Kungulo, we used him in Glory as a regular. Things haven't gone his way, but he's still a talent, and I still want to see more of him down the road. Very, very good guy. Very, very good fighter. Throws power combos, but Ledon, you know, he's so crafty. If you get a fight long enough, he'll find his moment, and he gets a victory here. Leticia Medjian gets a victory over Malore Kalchnikov. I believe I got that right, Kalchnikov. Leticia is got a strange style. I believe she's one of the few people who have victories over, and again, it was debated victory, over Mexen, if I'm thinking of that correctly. I know she has. Take that away if that was wrong. But she has a victory over someone elite, and it surprised me. And I thought it might have been Mexen, and I think a lot of people were upset with how the decision went. But, because I know Mexen's losses, I think she's one of the girls. Please forgive me if I'm wrong there, because I really could be. But I remember a lot of people disagreed with the decision. But nevertheless, she's got some big victories on her. This is another win for her. Gregory Toney gets a victory over veteran Frederick Sinistra. TKO stoppage in the second round. Gregory Toney's been doing it, man. This guy's been in the game forever, you know. And there for Badahari's return match. Upset victory over, what was it? I'll say it was Alexei Ignashov. I'm trying to think of the other ones. There's another one in there, but he's been doing it for a long time. So shout out to Gregory Tonery. Tony getting the victory. He was introduced to me as Tony Gregory for like 60% of his career. He's only been, I'll change that to 80% of his career. He's only been Gregory Tony for these last few years. I have no idea why that changed one day, but that's who he is. Arnold Aboratov gets a victory over Stefan Spisvergi. Spisvergi, man, he had all the talent. He had a weird style. He was an up-and-comer. He's got some cool victories out there. This was in a tournament, by the way. Spisvergi had a stoppage victory over Vladimir Toksoznov. Apologize for messing that name up. I thought that I practiced it well beforehand. But now that we're live, I blew it. But Stefania got a victory there. Arnold Obertov got a stoppage victory over Pavel Voronin. And that led to the final. And the final, of course, being Arnold Obertov's victory over Spisvergi by decision. Obertov is very good. Hopefully we can get him on a Glory roster one of these days. Heavyweight or 194. I'd say heavyweight at this point. He's a talented guy, man. I want to see him doing good stuff for himself. Making his living as a pride fighting, keep fighting. The opportunity will come back. And, of course, he had a little bit of a push before and people paid attention to him. I think that that didn't work that first run. The second run, a little bit different. Maybe this is the moment. We had another tournament, and that was Giuseppe De Demencio gets a victory over Abdullah Mabel, veteran Abdullah Mabel. Mabel's had a great run. He's got some great wins in his career. The other part of the tournament was Cyril Benzaquin, as he gets a victory over Eric Medjavsky. Got it the second time. Medjavsky. Those two Frenchmen then meet in the final, where we get a decision victory for Giuseppe. I want to see more of this guy. This is my first time really seeing his name emerge. I saw it in a card before. Now I'm going to go ahead and put it into YouTube, see what I got here. It looks like a really, really fun card, and I'm hoping that I can get all the fights. Sometimes it's hard to get some of the fights over in France, but this one looks like I might be able to get a couple of them. So thank you all for listening. Hour show, man. I can't remember the last time I went an hour. Normally my podcast is about 40 minutes, but I really broke down that Glory fight long. So thank you all for listening. I appreciate you being part of my kickboxing journey. I've been steady for you lately. Been doing them once a week. Meant to do it yesterday. Instead, I ended up doing it today, but you got your kickboxing. God bless. Thanks for listening. Have a good one. Peace.